Comedy Fix. This is Chris, Sam, and Jamie in that order. Today, we are going to be talking about scene length and how that affects one's improv, because kind of analogous to editing, I think scene length is one of those things where it's not directly studied or thought about or taught, but it makes a huge difference to a piece, to a show, to the energy in the room. So scene length is our topic. Oh, what do you guys want to say about that? Or should we just wrap it up?
I guess that's it. You can catch, I think you saying the piece is, to me, is what's the most important. And I don't think that's ever taught. Maybe that's something you work with your team when you're being coached. But the idea of having what I like to call like a show eye, a kind of pulled out macro perspective of the piece, I think takes some practice. And within that, I think you can start to play with and see the scene length. Now, I want to say for the record, I like a 30-second scene. I like a 10-minute and 30-second scene. So to me, it's about the piece. And not always, right? But like that, I like that idea of like, what do we need? How do we serve this piece? That's what I'm saying. Sam?
Yeah, I think that's a great place to jump off from, because I would disagree a little bit. I've certainly had conversations about scene length in the classroom or in like coaching sessions, but it's often in the context of the form. Like doing the deconstruction, at least in sort of like the pack style of the deconstruction, you talk about the run, and like very specifically the run is supposed to get like scene lengths that are shorter and shorter and shorter to kind of build momentum. I think if you're talking about a mono scene as a form, certainly you're talking about a 30-minute scene and that kind of a piece. And I feel like I've had coaches say, you know, for like a second beat, we might just need 5 seconds or something like that. But I guess coming into today, I was wondering, like, what is enough of a scene? Like, how do we know if it's too short or too long? Like, what are those boundaries that we're saying for scene length? Because, yeah, it can be anything, but why would we want it to be 30 seconds or 10 minutes and 30 seconds?
That's a good question. Wow. I mean, it's almost like when you learn how to edit, like Jamie mentioned, right? Like how do you know when it's right? I mean, like it's that feeling. It's that feeling. One thing that's been happening in my workshops is there is nobody else to edit except for me. I call scene. And I think that's given a couple things have happened. Our scenes are much longer because of that. And the people inside the scene feel safe. They feel like they can take their time and breathe without some fucking idiot bulldozer off to the side trying to jump into the scene or tag out because they have a funny idea. So I've given them permission to just relax, and that's been nice. That's been nice. I don't know. It's that internal feeling. I don't. All right. I think that's it. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. What do you got, Jamie?
I think scene length, I don't know, I kind of have a different opinions that don't even really relate to each other, so it's hard to say them all. One is I've had the thought of how fun it might be to have a show. Let's say you have a 30-minute show and you have a random timer that randomly ends your scene.
Oh, I love
that.
And
so you don't know how long you're going to be in that scene.
Oh,
you
can't plan,
oh, this is a 5-minute scene, so then I'm going to slow roll it. It's like you don't know if you have 5 seconds or 10 minutes. And so there's something about that, because I was thinking today about U.S. Supreme Court justices and term limits. And I was like, how do we, I mean, who doesn't think about that? And the thought that like, oh, maybe if we want to depoliticize the Supreme Court, maybe we have term limits that are totally random and unknown until the day that they are forced to retire. Then it's hard to politicize it because you kind of take the control out of it. I wonder if something like that is good for the performers as well, wherein they can have these scenes without an eye on we're playing towards a certain end goal. Then maybe that might make them more present because they don't have an ultimate end goal, or they're not permitted to formulate it. So that's kind of where I'm thinking
absolutely.
About it.
Absolutely. Jeez, I know I keep chiming in here. That is a really great idea. I think on the one hand, it's kind of a neat gimmick, But like you said, I think it makes every word matter. Or even no words, even the silences that you're choosing, you know that there's a time. Fuck, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this in the classroom and see what happens. I think this is brilliant. Sam?
I think this is a terrible idea.
Oh, God.
It's okay. Just awful. I mean, I deal with randomness and like when I try to make music and music production, it can be interesting to like spark stuff. But if it's completely random, there's nothing to hook into. I think it could be a cool teaching tool.
But Sam, I don't want to wait for you and your mediocre scene partner to try to find out what you think the scene is about 2/3 into the length of the scene. Let's go.
Then don't come to our mediocre show. But if I am doing a narrative show and it's the first scene and I need to establish what the world is or characters and stuff like that, and some timer dings off at 15 seconds, and so now like our entire show is thrown off because of it, like it could work and be an interesting exercise, but I don't know that that's going to work for everybody, and especially not the Supreme Court.
Narrative, I'll give you that. I'll give you that. I don't think this idea, Jamie's idea, well, I mean, it could be, but I don't see it being thrust into other established forms. I mean, it could be funky and wild. I see it just being a form into itself almost.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a good exercise because we've talked before about trying to make players feel powerful and how to make them feel powerful. And if they don't know, they don't have a chance to get comfortable. You know, it kind of keeps them off kilter, that level of uncertainty, because if they don't know if they have more than 15 seconds to do a scene, in theory, most of the time, I think a lot of them would play more ferociously from the top and really would just get to it harder and faster. And as opposed to slow rolling, like, you know, I think Chris, was this you who said, or maybe it was Sam, like McNapier would say, oh, you have a 2-minute scene.
Yes.
Or whatever. Or tell us what that is. I can't remember the specifics of it, but that reminds me of this.
Yeah, it's a bastardized memory that I had because I was always drunk in Chicago. But I did see Mick do this exercise once where he got two sets of two players up on stage. Well, actually, just the one set first, and said, you have 2 minutes on stage. Now, that's not a lot of time, so just do what you can. And then grab two more people up and just said, you have 2 minutes on stage. 2 minutes is really, it's like all the time in the world. So take your time. And just telling them that, so it's the same amount of time, but we didn't know we were being tricked in a sense. And I wasn't a part of it. I watched. It was interesting to see what that did to the players and how they would speed up or take their time. Now, Jamie, I think that if I did this in the class, I think the first 10, 20 times I would see people trying to rush out of the gate. And I think there's some benefit to that. But I would also like to say, whatever is inspiring you at the top of the scene, that can be enough also. Meaning, if you just walk over in character, in thought, you know, asking yourself these questions, you know, how do I feel? What's going on? You take a sip of coffee and you look over at your scene partner and the scene and the timer goes off. I think that's valid too, right? I know you do too. I just think that we would see some of the people rushing, but I think it would be nice to get to a place where as soon as I step foot on stage, off the back line perhaps, or in from the wings, I'm already loaded. I'm already in. You know, Sam, what I don't like, and you know this, and you probably don't like it either, is I don't like having to watch people figure out what the scene is for a very long time. What happens is a scene length is, no one can see me, but I'm holding my hands up, whatever, this long. And sometimes it takes them so long. I can, you know, okay, let's say a scene is 3 minutes. Sometimes at 2 minutes and 10 seconds, I think now the scene has begun. Now we're going. Everything else was fumbling and nervous energy and figuring out, asking too many questions. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I want to like start the, and I tell them, so that scene was about, you know, a minute. It wasn't 3 minutes. It took you 2 minutes to find out what was going on.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And it's certainly something that I've been a part of and I've seen people be a part of. But I just sort of have this bell in the back of my head that's ringing, which is like scene length was always kind of explained to me, especially in sort of the like heraldy kind of improv of like, you're going to build up to a big moment and that's your edit. And if you miss it, then the scene goes on for too long. And sort of like the danger of that is a character might change their point of view, which is totally fine in narrative. But in sketch, if you're going to hit a game a second time, you don't want the character to go past something and then like evolve into something else.
Sam, that's because, dude, I'm getting like PTSD here. You're triggering me here because that's, yeah, you're right. That's what we were told for a very long time. So you got a bunch of fear-based players out there making shitty moves or making the thinnest move that they can barely hold on to. I know this wording sounds weird, but just follow me. Until that edit comes through. And if the edit is missed, they start to sink. What type of scene work are you doing if you're going to sink if the edit doesn't come? What type of scene work are you going to do if the moment is passed by? Like, you need to have, in my opinion, sustainable scene work that can last fucking 3 days. You know what I mean? Like, and that used to happen a lot, Sam. And I used to be a part of it. So I totally hear you where, or the, you know, we used to teach our students, I think they still do, like edit earlier rather than later, because nobody's going to walk off stage going, I wanted more time. But most people would walk off stage meaning, why didn't you save me? But therein lies the problem. Why do we need all this saving? Why aren't we doing quality scene work that we feel good about anyway? So you do that move and you look to the wings, like, where's the edit? Like, that's a bullshit way to play. But I hear you, Sam, and that's how I spent the majority of my life. Hoping I can keep it together for this one moment. Here it comes and hit edit, you know, but like if the edit was missed, I would sink. Ugh. Mm-hmm. I'm getting grossed out.
It's interesting because I wonder what happens if you tell someone it's going to be a 30-second scene and you let it run for 5 minutes, right? They come out with that big energy. Probably I'm going to say like 9 times out of 10, they're going to come out like, oh my God, you know, da, 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 at 30-second mark. And I've been in exercises like this, right? Where the coach says, we're going to do it for a minute. And then you're like, wait, I think the time's up. And then now do I want to like build up momentum again? I don't know. It's just such a, it's a funny thing to talk about scene length as an arbitrary time, as opposed to, no, that's the length for that scene. Like, that scene should have been 30. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. The scene length is not measured in minutes and seconds. It's measured in peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
Or beats. Energy flows, or, you know, whatever. Yeah, beats perhaps. And that's why I like... And I'm intrigued by my own idea of the, I don't know, the random time, because even though the time is random, the reaction of the players is not random, right? The show does not become random because the time is random. The show is, it takes the power and the planning and the agenda away from the players because they don't know. And so they can't then formulate a plan based on their knowing. So I think it's actually, it's not an exercise in randomness. It's an exercise in letting go of control and being present and you know, finding things in the moment. Because, yeah, if you said you're going to have a 30-second scene, I've done this exercise with people. They come in hot, and then, like, 3 minutes later, they're floundering. And you know what? They find something because they were left out there to dry, and they dried up, and it looked beautiful because it was a beautiful sunny day and they were dry. I don't know. It's a terrible metaphor. I tried everybody. I was left out there too long. They should have edited. Someone should have popped in with a new idea.
You know, Karen Gracci, who we had here, you know, coach of Heyday, would kind of teach us a lesson when we thought the show was wrapped up, right? We go like, here we are in the third beat. Everything is coming together in a bow. Ta-da. But we're only at like 23 minutes. And she would just hold. She wouldn't pull the lights then. And now we're like all on the knees, you know, jazz hands, like, oh, fuck, we got to keep going. Now, that's interesting because it taught us to, like, you know, run through the finish. Like, you don't know when that finish is. And that's a, I think that's a nice, that's nice conditioning. But today for myself, I might pull it at 21 or 22 because you know, why do we need that? If it feels satisfactory. Now, in Karen's defense, there was those moments where we would force an ending. You know what I mean? Like, oh, well, we'll force that the butcher and the cop now know each other and they're in love. And she's like, no, that's not it. So we should be punished for that for sure. But I think a piece could be as long as a piece needs to be, you know. Sometimes I'll shock my students, not shock them, but they'll be surprised when I go, hey, that scene was 11 minutes. Holy shit. But I always encourage this, and I never do it myself, where I say, I also want to see the 30-second scene in the same piece. I think that would be fantastic. But I'm too much of a coward or a nice teacher to be like, that's it. Yeah, people are paying for this time. But maybe in my team rehearsals, I've been coaching these teams as opposed to my students. That might be, I want to see that. Just like I want to see, Sam, I want to see a scene where two people are tearing their hearts out. And the next scene, I want to see more of a slapstickish idea. You know, I want to see in theory, I want to see it all. And that means scene styles, scene lengths, mm-hmm. scene energies.
I feel like we've experimented with this in some of our folly rehearsals, and we've generally had a hard time mixing up the tempo of scenes. So is there a trap with scene length where you get into certain rhythms of scenes? Because I feel like we'd either do a lot of really short scenes, or they'd all kind of be medium-ish to long-ish.
God, that's a great question. I mean, that's a great point. Because now that you mention it, I myself have fallen into the trap. I guess for so long, and this podcast does this to me, it makes me crack open to things I've just been saying forever. I've always said, vary the energy, vary the length, vary the style. But like then when you put it on its feet, it could be a bit clunky. And I don't know why we're doing it.
And I think that's part of the issue is... Variety is nice, but especially if you're doing a two-person show, variety can be difficult while also maintaining like authenticity and honesty. Because if it's like, oh, we just had a quick 30-second scene and Sam and I are like ramped up and have adrenaline run, now we're supposed to do a slow breakup scene for 10 minutes. Like we don't have that energy. We're not in that mental space. So it would be forced to slow down to do that kind of scene. So I think that's why you might get repetitive fast scenes or repetitive medium length or long scenes or whatever, because it's hard to honestly, in an honest way, manufacture that pivot, you know?
Yeah. I actually tried to manufacture a form for a couple of two-person teams I was coaching a while ago. And I just drew out these squares. It'd be too hard to explain, but basically I was like, here's our form. First scene has to be peas in a pod. Second scene has to be straight absurd. The third scene has to be abstract. Then I want to walk it back down. Then I want to return to the straight absurd. I want to return to the peas in the pod, and I want to end it with the abstract. 1, 2, 3, 2, 1, 3. If anybody can follow me. Just for kicks, just to see like what happens if we put some parameters on this. And I don't know. I don't know that it worked. I think sometimes it was a nice reminder like, oh, we're forced to go abstract. I don't know if it works in this piece, but like, good reminder that maybe we should play a little bit more with some more avant-garde ideas. But mm-hmm. when you force that in there, I didn't love it. Because you know what, ideally, sorry Sam, just real quick, and this might just be one of my old kind of maxims or whatever, but I love the idea theoretically as the piece being within what the piece needs to be. Easy to say those words, right? Hey guys, I don't know, you started doing this show. We were going to do a Standard Herald, let's say, but it kind of went off the rails. It was very dark. Why don't we just do the dark show? Or why don't we end the show at 12 minutes and then all pull up chairs and talk to the audience for the next 10 minutes? Or why don't we do once, you know what I'm saying? Like really, really honoring our inspiration, not just going through the motions. Now, again, I've said this forever. Haven't seen it much, and I certainly haven't done it myself. So I think it might just be like a dream of mine.
Sam, what is the right time to end a scene?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I was thinking about that or something sort of adjacent to that running in here. And I will say, I think the least amount of time you need for a scene is to establish something. So I would say that if you get out of a scene before something has really been established, then that scene is probably too short. And you could establish something in 5 seconds. Like, that's very possible. Like Chris says, sometimes people are finding it. It might be 2.5 minutes. But I think that would be my low end. Upper end is a little tricky. I think you do want to end with some kind of momentum generally. I think you want to go out and leave people wanting more, or at least like leave some more for you to come back to if you need to come back to it. I don't know. I was thinking while Chris was talking you know, a lot of times you might hear we'll have longer scenes in the beginning of a piece, and as we get towards the end, we want shorter scenes to kind of build up momentum. And I would say that's probably generally true. And I will say for both narrative and like more sketchy kind of improv, that's probably generally true. But that doesn't answer your question.
They would say that with the Herald as well. They would say picture it like a funnel with the wide part on top, and it gets what the fuck word am I trying to say? Whatever, a funnel. The weird thing in the Herald specifically is the top is fine because we're taking our time figuring out what this is. But if you don't have a lock on it, it's kind of tough to return in the second and third beats and speed through it, especially in the UCB form where we kind of have to spell out that game nice and clear to our partner, our teammates, and the audience. Mm-hmm. And I would get tripped up sometimes. Like, oh, fuck, I know we're supposed to start. Because they always say blow it out. We want to end on this firework finale. You don't want to introduce a new character in the third beat. You don't want to introduce a new premise, a new idea. We want to just pay off what we've been setting up. But if you don't know what you're setting up, that could be a lot of math sometimes. You know?
Yeah, I remember when training sort of like the UCB style Herald, the worst version of our first beat would be it's gone on for like 4 minutes. So like we do need to edit. We didn't really nail down what the game is. And so like that second beat, that first line, right, has to be very, very clear to establish like what the hell we're coming back to.
Yes, yes. Oh, that's Jamie, talk about not playing from a point of inspiration. You're looking to your scene partner because they seem to like they've stepped out a little faster than you with wide eyes. You have no idea where you are until they go, Sergeant, all the meat is gone. And, you know, you're like, oh, okay. Authority has power over the little. And then it's like so sad. It's so sad. That's why I felt fucking handcuffed for a decade of my life in this fucking art form. Jeez Louise.
It's just nobody's having fun in that room. Nobody's having fun at that room. So I think we have hashed out shorter scenes are possible, longer scenes are possible, shorter scenes bring momentum, longer scenes slow down the momentum. It's good to have varied scene lengths. But I guess we haven't helped anybody listening to this podcast. That's basically been a 30,000 foot above the ground overview of scenes. What are people going to take away from this?
Well, because you need to start to like deconstruct this old model. Like you need to have a conversation with your team. It's easier if you and Sam have a conversation. Not as easy if you're one of nine put together on a team, coached by somebody you don't really know on any given house team. Meaning the idea, bringing up the idea of being able to experiment. You have to trust these people. They have to trust you that if I make a move, it's okay. You can edit my scene and my feelings won't be hurt. Ego is secondary. You know, like there's a lot. Because listen, we're talking about it here, but well, not today. Today, if I did a scene with Heyday, I mean, we've seen those blackout lines. You see that one line at the top, you're like, Dad, where are you? For some reason, it gets a huge laugh. Edit that motherfucker, right? But I think I know most of my scenes are going to be 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Sorry. How to help people now, I guess it's like, ask yourself what it is you want. Then talk to the people around you, ask what they want. Now, most people don't know that they're allowed to want this. Because this is fucking 50 years of the same shit. So it's very, you know what I'm saying, guys?
Yeah, I think it's so interesting that you bring up the sort of nine-person team model because I do think there is something practical to scene length as well. Because if, you know, you and Zach do a 20-minute scene.
Right.
Like, that's, you know, maybe your team will support you the first time you do it. But if, like, that becomes the thing, like, there's... Now there's competing things, right? And especially if you're a house team put together by a theater or you're a practice group of strangers who met in a class kind of a thing, there does have to be some kind of sharing of the stage that has to be negotiated.
Which is a bummer.
That's super interesting. I had never thought about that. But improv is unique in that you know, equality way, where there's an expectation of equality of stage time. Whereas if you're in a rock band, there's a, you know, there's a lead singer and like they kind of run the show and it's kind of understood that way. And the bassist, you're lucky if anybody even knows your name.
Well,
same thing with like a Broadway production. There's lead actors who take most of the role. So it's interesting to me, thinking about it now, that improv is not that way.
But that bassist is going to get a solo in one song, right? Like the drummer is going to get a solo in a different song. Like you do share a little bit.
A little bit, sure. Listen, I think we're on to something here, Jamie. Because, I mean, I remember reading a quick article. Well, it wasn't quick, but my memory is fading. About how improv is more like soccer and less like basketball. Where LeBron James, almost by himself, can win a game. Like, that's how incredible he is. I mean, you know, there's other people, but like, meaning if you don't have LeBron, there's a good chance you'll lose. This is back when he was at his best. I don't know sports. But soccer, it's very important that everybody is playing to the best that they can, because the weakest person on your team can ruin the whole show. So, or the game, pardon me. So they were saying that improv is more like soccer as opposed to basketball. But I like this idea, Jamie, of making it more like the rock band or like basketball. What if, you know, I'll use myself for example. I don't want to, whatever. You know, I just think I'm this rock star. Well, I am. But, you know, you put me and someone else on stage. Me, I'll use Zach Huddleston. But then, but we want it to be our show. This has never been done, I don't think, Jamie, where you have like supporting players. Where, so,
yeah.
So Zach and I are the lead. And then, you know, I don't know who would fill in. Maybe, even if it was students, say, all right, guys, you know, you guys, this is called the extras. Or you're the extras, your background. Fill out every coffee shop, fill out every mail room, be the jury. And that's kind of cool.
But you know how fucking great that show would be if like everybody mildly knew, oh, you two are going to be the leads and we're just going to offer background. You know how fucking tight that show would be?
Like
it would be
it.
So good.
Yeah, there's Uh-oh. One show, if I remember the name right, I'm not gonna name it, but if I remember it right, the premise is sort of it's a serial, so the same characters every week, and the person who put the team together was the lead character every improv show, and that felt so that left such a bad taste in my mouth to me, like, oh, so they're the only one who gets to be, you know, Superman or whatever every week. It's like,
but is that because, but that's because they cast themselves, right?
Yeah.
Not because there was always one lead.
I think because they cast themselves. I will say what I remember about that show is that one of the performers who played supporting characters killed it. Like was just the all-star of the show. He was like every supporting
okay.
character you
okay.
wanted to see and just
but
destroyed.
But if that's my show, you're out. You're out. Or I don't know. What happens if we have a better Tybalt than we do Romeo, Sam?
Oh, you got to kill him. I mean, that's the Mercutio problem, right? It's like you hear scholars talk about it. They're like, Shakespeare had to kill him because otherwise he would just have taken over the entire play.
So, I mean, you know, there are leads in everything we watch, every TV show, every movie. Sometimes some weird kind of character actor is kind of like a breakout, you know, in that moment. But they know their role because literally they know their role. They have they have four lines. I have 40. I think that's fucking cool, even if I cast myself. I mean, also people want to see me. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting.
I like it.
Yeah. I mean, I do think in like narrative shows, right? Like you do set up heroes and villains at the beginning of the story and they get more screen time. It was actually something my improv class did where the teacher was like, hey, we've had two shows. This is our third show. Going into our third show, these two actors haven't had big roles, so let's make sure that they get big roles this next time out. But I mean, if you and Zach did you know, whatever,
listen,
it'd be interesting.
Sometimes players will go on a hot streak also. Like I'm thinking of, like, you know, all the shows I did with Heyday, or one of us, I'll use Peter Floyd, he listens, hi Peter, you know, and this is not too far from the truth, like Peter might have like a month where he's just fucking killing. I don't know, man. I know I have his big ego as anybody, but like I was cool with that. It was mm-hmm. cool to watch him fucking go off, or any of my teammates for that matter, and I really genuinely mean that. Now I don't know if I would sign up for that show for 2 years where I just watch somebody slay, but I think also how beautiful is it, Sam, when we see the fucking, I don't even know who great improvisers are anymore besides my own team. But when we see, say, the next show, Peter Floyd be a coffee table, we go, oh, that's fucking cool. Cool that he knew to like serve the piece, serve the scene, right? Mm-hmm. Like we do take the supporting. If it was just everybody screaming, which sometimes we see, it's not as fun. I don't know where we're going with this, but I like the idea. So far, Jamie's winning here. I want to see those fucking timed scenes with the timer, and I want to fucking cast the show where I'm the lead and everybody else is supporting.
I mean, we talk about, like, you know, having a few characters in your back pocket, and it's like, there's nothing wrong with that. Just like, I don't think there's anything wrong with having, it's a 5-person team. We're going to have 2 leads and everybody else is going to be support. I think that would be a really tight show because there's no struggle over figuring out who's doing what, when you take a lot of that uncertainty out. I don't know. It's just interesting how improv never really developed that way.
If I showed up to improv for the people to do a show, I'm using that as an example because that's a theater and show where I'm kind of like, what's going on? Like, you know, I'm not there often, but I'm always like, so explain this format here or how does this go? If Matt were to say, oh, in this show, Jamie and Jonathan Mangum, the way the show runs is that we kind of just keep supporting them in any choice they do. I'm like, all right, let's go.
Hey, have you ever done that with, cause I saw you with Scott Adsit in a show once. And I feel like if you're playing with someone who the audience recognizes, like, don't you kind of throw more focus on them and try to feature them as an actor?
Dude, I did a show with Dan Bacadall and he's the only person I can remember. I got drunk later, but I remember how excited I was. But no, Sam, I mean, of course, when he like spoke, I like listened, but I also remember trying my best to like prove to him and myself that I would deserve to be there. So I might've made some stupid moves, to be honest. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it was such like an opportunity. Mm-hmm. I wanted to jump out there with him and like, oh, like we're equals. We're both cops. Although I was scared the whole time.
Yeah. I don't know. That's I'm still really trying to process the fact that we don't really have leads and supporting roles in improv groups, because for all that people say improv is about, like, oh, if we all win together, it's like, but everybody's competing for stage time. So it's like, if everybody just knew their, it's like the language of improv that, well, it's spoken about doesn't actually match the end result where everybody's competing for stage time.
Well, okay,
I don't know. I'm just processing this is all. Yeah, interesting.
I don't know if I want to use names, but I can think of one or two teams that are kind of like the Beatles. They're popular, and there's an obvious George and John. Granted, there are some teammates, pardon me, some audience members that love Ringo. Paul and John. Paul McCartney, John Lennon, George. Okay, you know what I'm trying to say. But it's obvious. We know who leads this show. And again, I don't want to say the names, but I think that's an example where it works though, that the Ringo and the George Harrison on this team kind of know what's up and they're happy to be on board, frankly, because you know what I mean? And I mean, yeah. I can think of a few of them where like, oh, this is a great team. That person's fucking great. I mean, I've been on teams of people who are fucking much better than I am. They're great. And I'm happy to be there and I'll play the fucking drums and like, oh, go. And the audience knows too. I've also been the fucking Paul McCartney or John Lennon. I've been that one too. And I know it. And the team knows it. Mm-hmm. It sounds so bad when you say it out loud, but it shouldn't be bad. It shouldn't be bad. There's experience level. There's comfortability and confidence.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a farce to think that everybody on an improv team is equally as good and will get equal stage time. And then also we're going to have a great show. It's like, there's so many lies that are just being tossed around in the sake of like good spirits and friendship, that it's all bullshit. I don't know. I'm just really interested.
Isn't the team better when you know what's up? If I'm going to see with Jamie Moyer, I'm going to do my best. But when she goes on a run, how dare I would never jump in front of a run to get my words in. No. I'm going to stoke that fucking flame. I'm going to just keep serving her.
Right. But how many, there are not a lot of Jamie Moyers. And I would probably say that for most improvisers, and this is the worst situation to be in. You're on a team with all volunteers and there's no hierarchy and there's no clear leader. And we're all going to make group decisions and everyone's kind of out to get theirs. And I do think with long running teams, people get into like habits. Like I've seen improvise Shakespeare a couple of times and like Blaine Swenson's almost always like the bad guy trying to like pull the strings, and like Thomas Middleditch loves playing like the weird side characters kind of stuff. So like, I do think people fall into roles and habits kind of a thing. But just practically, in my experience, so many improvisers want that stage time, right? Like they don't.
Do they?
In my experience, they do.
Yes,
but
okay.
That could be biased.
No, you know what? I'm sorry. I said it so strongly. It's because I'm thinking about like my current students, for instance. And instead of their class show being them fumbling over each other, what if I was like, oh, the class show here at the West Side is myself and Jimmy Parkinen do a two-person show and you guys support. I think a lot of them would be thrilled to be like, oh, the pressure's not on me. I don't have to step forward. But Sam, that's a very like lower experienced player. I guess you're right. Like I can imagine a lot of the old school Herald players at IO, if you jumble them up, everybody's still kind of, they want their stuff.
I mean, my mind is being blown right now, you guys. What we're talking about is like the old master apprentice model of like becoming a professional, but like for improv is like, yeah, maybe there should be Chris Alvarado's and Jamie Moyers. And then you get five people with 2 years experience and they're just your support until they can learn from the masters way, and like you can said, train them. It's
there's,
like,
there's chorus lines and stuff. There's.
Yeah. Right? And what's wrong with that? And then they get education and you get support. It's like, and then they go off and they're masters again. It's like there's a whole economic model built on this. And now all of a sudden improv thinks everybody's equal. And it's a lie.
Yeah, honestly, this is something I wanted to bring up when we were talking about like reinventing training centers. When you hear about people who came up in the 80s in like IO or like UCB when I was first starting, you hear people tell stories where they're like, yeah, I was in level two and they invited me onto a house team. And you're like, I'm sorry, like what? And like, oh yeah, I got to play with like this legendary performer when I was like still going through classes. And you're like, I don't understand what you're talking about, because that is so far from my understanding of what would go on today, honestly, because I think people are really greedy for stage time. So they don't want to break up a team of all, you know, veteran improvisers, because they're all veteran improvisers. They'll do a good show, but you kind of lose, I think, a little bit of the freshness that the new people bring in, but also the ability to teach those new people how to become a veteran in some ways.
So, no, I hear you. So, I always, every 2 weeks, I'm like, I'm going to audition for a play. I love plays. I'm going to audition for a play. And I go online. I don't really know where to look. I don't know. But do you think if there was an ad, there are no computers, no, you know, there's a casting, there's a casting breakdown for a new show. It's got a 6 week run, pays $100 a show. But the role is supporting improviser. Just like if you were going to audition for a play and you're auditioning for the lead, say the lead's already cast, you audition for one of the side roles, the bartender, the taxi driver, you're going to be that. And this, I wonder if people would audition.
I mean, Chris, I would. I think it'd be fun to like work with great people and do a great show. It's like, I'm not there for my personal ego. I'm there to have a good time and maybe learn something. It's just nice to be a part of the experience. I don't know. This is all a very interesting conversation that has nothing to do with scene time.
Who cares?
yeah. I mean, I think what we've lost a little bit is casting of improv, where you look at an ensemble to say like, okay, like we need our character-y actor. We need that person to pop in for a scene or two. Chris, when you were talking about your sort of idea, again, in the sort of the training center pitch, like the idea that if it's someone's birthday, we could say, you know what, this is Christina's show. We're going to make sure that Christina is the star for the next hour, and we're going to support her as much as we can. I actually think you would, to sort of Jamie's point, end up with better shows, because you go in there with a specific intention as opposed to maybe the trap of trying to find it and try to find, well, who are we going to follow this time?
Yes. And think about this. When I do, I don't know if I want to speak too much at the school, but there are times when you are paired with somebody that isn't as good as you are, as experienced as you in any given class. Of course, there are opportunities for you to learn there and grow, and this is how you can be a better support and whatever. But you typically don't have those wow moments with somebody who isn't as good. You can stumble on them accidentally, of course. But we all know, we've been in that class. We're like, fuck, I'm going up with so-and-so. As opposed to, hey, I'm excited to go up with so-and-so. Now, isn't that a bit detrimental to the person who is good? Yes, I understand that there are benefits to working with somebody who's less experienced. But after a while, it's like, yo, let me shine, dog. And why are we forcing? Why can't, you know, listen, after 6 weeks, guys, thank you for coming to my class. After 6 weeks, we're going to do a show, but I'm going to be casting it. So let's see what happens in the 6 weeks. Yes, it's kind of a competition, but it's a personal competition. You do your best and have your fun, and we're going to see how this fits in this show. Great. Here's the cast list at the end of it. Martha, Jackson, you two are our leads. Congratulations. I don't know. I mean, I feel a little icky, but maybe that's just like my old thinking.
Well, I was just going to say, I like that because one of the hindrances, I think, and this, I think this is true of society as well, is that the farce of equality is like some people are not equal. Some people are smarter. Some people are more talented, are wealthier in society. And then in improv too, some people are better. Some people have better references. Some people are funnier. Some people have timing, all of these things, but we're not allowed to acknowledge that. Everybody's put on this equal playing field. It's like, well, some people shine. Let's let those people shine so that the show as a whole is stronger. And it's like you're not allowed to acknowledge that there might be somewhat of a hierarchy of ability.
Whoa. Careful, Jamie. You sound like a capitalist here. We gotta pull it back a little bit. What's interesting is I don't know how this works in sketch, right? Like SNL has featured players or kind of a thing, but then like in a sketchy improv show, like how do I feature someone more than other people? But like this is very common in narrative, right? Like the Doctor Who, improvised Doctor Who, was super popular. They always chose like who was going to be the doctor of that week, so they kind of knew that would be the person. The Commedia stuff, it's like, you know, the lovers are going to be really featured, and like the random, you know, character probably isn't going to be in it too much. I'm curious how this would work in, say, like, well, I mean, isn't the Herald even built to be equal? We're going to have three beats with three scenes, which, and there are eight people.
Yes, which is unfortunate because you see Homegirl, who's so good, and then you're like, fuck, we're not going to see her for a long time.
Yeah, right?
She goes away. I mean, she might come in the other beat to support whatever, but we're like, fuck. Or you see like a montage, and somebody who is good is also a bit of a bulldozer. And you're like, thank God. Because I've coached those teams. And it's like, hey, player so-and-so, you know, you got to just, you know, watch the give and take. Also, thank you. Because had you not stepped out and made those moves, we would have had to suffer through this scene that was awful and terrible, or maybe two or three of them back to back. I'm so glad you stepped forward and took care of that. You know?
Sam, I mean, you're an improv historian. Where did all this equality stuff come from?
Hippies! Hippies, all this woo woo whoosh whoosh hippie junk, right? Like
now, who sounds like a capitalist?
Now I will forever sound like a capitalist. If you look at like Nichols and May, right? Like they were sort of two person and very much featured themselves. If you look at something called the Committee, right? That's like by its nature kind of sharing the load among everyone, and so I think that just got like baked into the Herald, which people say is a riff on the sitcom, but like a sitcom does have an A story. And if you wrote a sitcom that didn't feature the sort of A story more than the other stories, people would be like, I don't really know what the A story is. I don't know what I'm following here.
Look, I also don't mind the way we're doing it now. If I'm watching a show full of murderers. Great. I think that's cool. Like, I mean, I don't think it's like we need to, it has to change. I don't think we have to change the way it is. I do think it's worth also bringing this option up. You know,
I think, yeah,
fine. Maybe it's not part of your house team, but I'll go to your Thursday night, 10 o'clock show to watch this like cool idea. Now, I haven't seen much of Red Door, or I haven't seen much of the other one. I always want to say Reckoning, but it's not that. It's like a, it starts with an R.
Resistance.
Resistance. I haven't seen that stuff, but I want to see Justin Michael Terry and Homeboy like go nuts. And I want to see them like, instead of just miming beating up the people in the room, I want to see them, you know what I'm saying? Like beat up the extras. That sounds mean. No, don't clip that.
It's been a while and I probably didn't see as many shows as I should have. But seeing Red Door and seeing those guys in the Resistance is a very different experience. In the Resistance, they're not the principals, right? Like there are other people who are maybe more experienced or more primary in the genesis of that project, as opposed to like when they're sort of the stars of their Red Door show, I don't know how often they sort of star in a Resistance show. So I think that's a really interesting point of comparison to talk about.
Yeah, and this may only be something that kind of comes up with larger groups, but I think I do like it as a model because I think then it might be a way, it might be maybe like Sam's saying, it's like a new training center model. It's like master to apprentice. Like maybe you go through the school and then you get paired with a master and then you get put on those teams and then you slowly get to learn and that's how you can continue your education after you have like the basics. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it gets a little clunky because then we start going into like, who's considering whom the master? And like, we also have those lightning in the bottles.
Me, I can tell you who's the master and who's not.
Yeah, well, I can think of some names, some quote unquote higher up people that have ran theaters and stuff who think they're masters. Or I'll tell you what, you know, Theater X in the Midwest, that's, I always use this example of a homeboy who finished, you know, IO in Chicago in 1999 and is now the guru. Like that's, that situation is going to suck because I'm going to go in there and just smoke that dude. And I'm getting mad at this guy who I don't even know. Because also I can think of players too. I can think of the X Factors in some of these classes that are fucking great. That are great. And you're like, fuck, like you said, Sam, that example, oh, I was in level two and I got to do ASCAT. Like there are those players too. So it would suck to have to make them go through a situation where they're apprenticing if they're already rocking and rolling.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's true, but what's the alternative? They get together with other students at their level because nobody else wants to play with them. Or if they're really that great and they're a superstar, then people are going to want to play with them. And I don't know. I think it's an interesting, I'll have to think about it more after this podcast, but I think it's an interesting way of kind of organically continuing the education without the rigid structure of a training center. It feels, I don't know, kind of, there's something that really makes sense about it to
me. I think you're right. I think I hesitate putting it in the training center model. I'd almost want to see it work professionally first. Like I want to go see that run where this is the idea behind it, Jamie, right? Like two or three people, like we're the leads. You all aren't, even if they are good improvisers who aren't the leads. I want to see.
I mean, Chris, you're the man to start this. You pick out another person you want to lead with, ask around some of your students who would be interested, get 3 to 5 and say, hey, do you want to do a supporting role in the show we're putting on for the next month or do rehearsals with them? Like you're the one to get the firsthand knowledge. You're in the position to change the system, man.
I mean, especially if it's like an improvised sitcom kind of a thing where you're like, look, every week is going to be a 30-minute episode about me. I'm going to drive the story because I'm going to be the main character. I'm going to draw from my life. I'm going to need supporting people to kind of back my vision up. It could be really interesting in that kind of a format.
Good point. Because, Jamie, right, that's a really good point. And that has been done before. Like you said, there has been serial shows. I remember one at IO that ran was like about a high school or whatever, you know, like kind of making fun of like teen dramas. You show up every week and there are leads. Granted, there are other storylines. Jamie, would you have to, what, cause like, here's my question to you, Jamie, what does it look like if we get 8 students in a room? Hey, thanks for being here. You're in level 2, you're in level 4, 5, 2, 5. Great. Jamie and I, we're all going to do a show together, but we're the leads. If that's all you said and then started an improv show based on a suggestion, that might be a little wonky. Does that mean they wouldn't step out? Or do we have to have a structure like Sam's saying, like the improvised high school drama or something? You know what I mean? Like where, I don't, Do you understand?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And maybe it's not for everybody. The problem is you have, you know, 50 or 60 years of improv woo-woo language to combat to start this new hierarchical model where people are stars and some are just supporting roles. So that's going to take a while to get used to. So people might, you know, have a ugly look on their face for a while.
You know, but what? When there's an easy way to do this. You don't initiate, I initiate. Like, you sort of set that ground rule that, like, I'm the one who's going to tell you what scene we're in. Like, you step out, I'll take care of you.
If that's the case, then I want to do a student show where it's just me. There's not two people. I'm the lead.
Great.
I will run the entire show from the inside.
Yeah. By the way, love when I see improvisers do that.
Matter of fact, I could do that right now. I could do that right now. Right 10 minutes before their class show, I go, oh, quick little thing. I'm going to be joining you guys. Also, I'm going to be running it. You'll see. I wouldn't even have to explain it any further, Jamie. I would know how to initiate. I would know how to set up. I would know how to tag. I would know how to do it all. It might be exhausting.
By the way, there's actually something really cool in this where now you don't have to teach your students necessarily to do everything. Because if you're going to be the funny guy at the center of it, you get to be the absurd. Now you can just focus on like, okay, this is how you straight man. All right. No, you know what? You didn't play that bank teller real enough, right? Like you need to really ground it so that, you know, it's kind of interesting that you could like focus on
Sam,
specific skills.
Yeah, listen, I'll have my students run scenes, you know, for whatever. And then sometimes I'll be like, you know what? You and me, let's jump up. And then I might do a series of scenes with everybody. Not because I need stage time or that I'm like, I need to show them I'm good so that they get the feeling of what it feels like to be in a successful scene, what I would consider success, honestly. And they're like, oh, I can do this. Yeah, you can. Did you see, you know, what was different about our scene versus the scene you did over there? Well, you labeled me as this or whatever the fuck it is, right? Mm-hmm. Like there is some learning there too, where it's kind of nice. I mean, it reminds me of First Time with Khaki, Craig's show, where he would just play with students. It's always going to be a great show because you have a fucking Craig Kakowski. Wow.
Yeah. Right.
And Jamie, how come I feel like this is one of the most like self-conscious, I can never say that, episodes we're doing. Because I could feel people rolling their eyes. Because for some reason, are we not allowed to say that we feel that we are superior or better improvisers?
That's right. Because we live in an equal society where everybody is the same.
But like we know
if you think you're special, everyone's going to get mad at you.
I'm very quick to say and happy to say who I believe is better than me, but for some reason
it's not allowed.
It
probably goes back to, you know, the roots of this country and the moral puritanism and the modesty that's built into our culture. And so you're not allowed to be, you know, and maybe, you know, some people don't have an accurate view of themselves, so they're falsely inflated. You know, that seems
but
that
like
happens
LeBron,
all the time.
You know, something when it comes to sports is you can say I'm the best and then point to the scoreboard and point to the stats, right? Like, I just am. The numbers show it. Where this is a little more malleable. Though, I fucking know when I've had a great show. I know when I fucking killed it. So do my teammates and vice versa. I know when they're killing it. It's, you can equate it. There is a, I don't know if it's laughs per second or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to think of like a sports analogy because like values are put on players, right? Like LeBron is making more money than the center you haven't heard about. So like, of course, LeBron's the star. We're going to pass the ball to him. But I am curious why, let's say you were just hypothetically an actor trying to make it in Hollywood. And I could tell you that there are two different ways that you could have a show that I'm going to get all my agent friends to show up to. You can have one show where it's your Herald team, you're one of 8 or 9 people, maybe you're going to have a lot to do in that show, maybe you're not, or you've put together a group of people, maybe they're not as experienced as the House Herald team, but you've trained with them for 6 months, so they know literally their role, and you're going to do a show where you are the star of it. Like, which one would you want to invite that agent to, and which one's going to be kind of a better showcase? Maybe that's the form, the showcase.
Which do you think is going to be a better show? You know,
that too.
It's like, it's not even just a better showcase.
Well, I don't know. I think this is a great question. I think, well, I don't know. I haven't actually thought about it, but just coming right out of off the top of my dome, this watching Heyday is going to be a better show than watching Me with the Students. But You're right, Sam. If it's an industry night and fucking Peter Floyd catches fire, well, I mean, that's the fucking part of that movie, Don't Think Twice, right? It's the people from SNL are in the house. And all of a sudden, Keegan-Michael Key's character is stepping forward and doing big accents and characters to get featured. So that's really fucking interesting, Sam, because I've always... Jeez, this is a crazy episode. Because I'm always shocked, right, that I'm not further in my career than I think I should be, right? I think I should be more successful as an actor on television and movies. And no agent is at my show when I'm like fucking doing a Pretty Pretty Pony show where it's just lights out. I'm just fucking on fire. And I always think like, yeah, maybe I'm not great in that audition room, but I wish they could see me really murder on stage. I wish they could see that. The different characters I play, the status, the physicality I have, the emotion I have. Like, I feel very powerful on stage because it's the only thing I've ever fucking done. And now I'm picturing this idea, Sam. We fucking invite industry. But here's my question to you, Sam. Will I showcase better with student improvisers where I'm the star, or where Heyday knows we're going to feature you?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked this question. I was just wondering what it would be like if Heyday did a roulette and it was like, you know what? Like, we're going to do a sitcom for everyone in our cast. And one week it's going to be Jamie exclamation mark. The next week it's going to be Peter exclamation mark. That's cool. And like kind of knowing, I think each of them would have a different flavor to it. I think there would be some really interesting stuff that comes out of it.
God, that is such a cool idea. The exclamation point too. For some reason, like the marketing looks cool. I get to see the name. But then you get the two-person shows, like you guys, where you're both featured. When I think the only successful long form is what? The Middle Ditch and Homeboy, right? Yeah. I mean, like, because I don't know if we can measure the success because they have a Netflix special. But God, this is giving me a lot to think about, Jamie. It's like... I know I've said it. I've already spoken too much today. I know people are probably tired of me. But it's this. I want to do more in the entertainment industry. But for some reason, maybe I'm not good at auditioning. Maybe it's luck. Who knows? I'm not where I think I should be. I'm very good at long form improvisation. But it's a form that tells me to support what I need to support and back down when I need to back down. And that's like cool and all. Except there isn't that showcase opportunity. I mean, there is. I guess you could have a good show. You could have a good show. You could catch fire that night. That's true. But something that you would want to set up for your own fucking success. I'm going to go through my Rolodex. I'm going to reach out to all the favors. I'm going to get every manager and agent I know and my friends and their reps to come to see. Well, how about this? People do one-man shows all the time to feature themselves. The Just for Laughs, you go up there by yourself. You do 5 minutes, for new faces. But mine is going to be, and I don't know, Sam, if we landed on it or not, but it's going to be you guys and fucking couple of Heyday people. And it's going to be it's going to be Chris exclamation point. And I just go ape shit. Ugh.
I think it'd be really cool. I think if you practiced it with a group of, you know, imagine the people who would get cast as a day player in a sitcom, right? Like, they're not the Alice and Janies of the world. But if you had with yourself, like, one really strong improviser, and you filled out the rest of the cast with, like, people who would be more than happy to do a show with you, and you practiced it, I think that would be a really cool show.
I would love that rehearsal, Sam, now that I think about it. The practice. I haven't even thought about that. Listen, I have people in my life that love me who are also talented. If I was like, hey, do me a solid, two rehearsals, one performance, they would do it. What would a rehearsal look like? That's so crazy. I might try it with my own students. I'm going to be like, it's going to be this student's half hour. It doesn't have to be the whole class.
Well, what would it look like if you had 15 students and they were all there to actively support whatever scene? Like, how fucking cool would that be? Like, that restaurant scene is gonna look insane.
Oh my god. But and you get to pull out the person you want to be the waiter. So instead of like relying on you know, the kismet of like the right person steps out, like you can actually kind of player coach it from the inside and be like, yeah, yeah, I want like that crazy character actor to be the one waiting to table this scene.
I know we're going to wrap up here. One of my students just yesterday sent me this, this article about some movie. I think it's called My Son, something with the sun. And I didn't read the article because I don't want to. But the headline was like, this actor wasn't given a script in this movie. And he just honestly reacted and improvised to everybody else. And the reason why I didn't read the article is because I self-sabotaged. Because I was so enraged with jealousy. I'm like, that's my fucking spot. Maybe I'm just not good with the lines. Maybe I don't know. I don't know. But like, that's what I want to do. And what we're saying here, guys, feels like that too. It's like, why have I been putting a cap on the one thing I think I'm good at? Why has nobody in this industry seen me do the one thing where I think I'm good at? Instead, I have to go into a room and like do something I'm not good at. And I'm like, just, I don't know. Sorry. Anyway, later on tonight for a sold out house, I'm going to fucking blow the fucking roof off the theater and not be selfish about it. That's just who I am. I play well, but you'll never see that because we don't really talk about that. We keep that down here. Oh my God.
Yeah. I also love the idea of like a Peter Fluey either writing something or directing the team and you have nothing to do with it. And then you have to step into it. But like Peter's kind of, as an example, it's like puppet mastered it from behind the scenes for you.
There's plenty of ways to feature. You know what, Jamie? It's because now you're right, Sam. We're off to the races with ideas, but because we had to be given the permission to think that we could be featured in something, Jamie. You know what I mean? I would never think of this because I'm like, how do I get 9 people on board with my idea and we're all equal?
It's the shackles of equality.
Because I would show up for them. I would love to do the Peter show! I would fucking love to do the Sam show. I would show up for you in a heartbeat. In a fucking heartbeat and wearing all black, so I fucking fade into the black and we just fucking feature you, dog.
Oh my God, the costumes? Like, yeah, everyone else is in black and you're in bright colors? Oh,
I'm busy.
God.
I'm busy.
Yeah, Jamie's busy.
Well, I mean, I know Jamie wouldn't support me in a show.
This is great. This is great. I'm worried that some people are mad at us or me because I'm a people pleaser and I want people to like me. But this feels like a fucking revelation to me. This feels wonderful and like nothing I should be ashamed about.
Well, what's so interesting, and we kind of came across this in like the training setter episode with Zach most recently. I think that maybe Sam's right because improv was inhabited by hippies and artists. The assumption was like equality and stuff like that, as opposed to if you bring a business mindset to like, how am I going to fucking make this? How am I going to do this? How am I going to build this from like that perspective? I think there's a lot untapped because people haven't really brought maybe the business savvy or the economic savvy or that kind of at least thinking to improv and art, at least this kind of art performance. So I think there's a lot here and I'm really actually excited about it as well.
Me too. Jamie, people say that all the time. I'm one of them. I'm not good at the business part. And I bartend at the West Side. When I used to bartend and watch these Just for Laughs or these Comedy Central people go up there and like do 5 minutes of like sketch or the one man show and they have the thing. And I watch them like, damn, I can't write like that. So why aren't I featuring? I'm saying the same thing, but fucking the business part. I guess I'm afraid that people think it'll be anti them. You know what I mean? When it's just pro Chris trying to fucking make a business move here, dog.
Yeah. And again, I think, you know, something that we've talked about in the past too is like, this isn't forever. This is a limited engagement. This is a specific idea that has some boundaries on it.
I'm going to do this.
Yeah. I love this.
I'm going to do this.
I would support you at that show.
I know you would.
You know what? I would ask people to come to that show. I would have confidence that it would be a good show.
And wrapping up here, I think we all agree that the perfect scene length is 1 minute and 45 seconds.